Greetings and welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. This is a weekly podcast of Sunday homilies and theological reflections given by the staff of the Catholic community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Xavier Lavaghetto, OP, pastor and director of the Catholic community. It is the 32nd Sunday in Ordinary Time, and the readings are from Cycles A.
Stalled in traffic, I started looking at car bumper stickers. And one I read and I laughed. It read, "When the rapture comes, can I have your stuff?" In Bible-believing America, 27% believe Jesus will come within the next 40 years. And if you add those who say his coming is probable, then it is a staggering 47%. Now, don't get me wrong. Jesus will come when he is good and ready. But I'm amazed how so many can be so definite when Jesus was so clear. "Keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." Or again, "It's not for you to know the times or periods that the Father has set." And we could go on. Actually, predicting the Lord's coming is an American cottage industry. We had 43 predictions of the world's demise for the 20th century. But the 21st century will not be outdone. It's only 2017, and we have amassed already 54 predictions for this century. I guess a measure of people's stress and fears. I guess the message is live fast. Well, today's second reading is where the notion of rapture all began. "Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up." In Latin, rapimur, and gives us the English rapture, to be taken up in the clouds together with them to meet the Lord in the air. So we will be with the Lord forever. Now, how that verse becomes 2,000 years later, the rapture, when good Christians are taken and the rest of us are left behind, is beyond my poor brain to figure out. The idea really started with John Darby in 1827 and found its most popular expression in Tim LaHaye's 16 books, Left Behind series. It sold over 65 million copies. I am sure he cried his way to the bank. And he spices them up with talk of global conspiracy and the Illuminati. Oh God, we love a conspiracy. But what did Paul imagine when he wrote it in the first century? And what lessons does it offer for the 21st century? Especially since it's read at many funerals. You see, our imagination of the future drives our decision-making in living out the present. So the Thessalonians are worried, not about Christ's coming. They are fretting that their beloved dead will be raised only after Jesus comes. And they'll miss the sight of Jesus' coming. Sounds silly, actually, but in any case, that was their worry. Paul answers, "This we declare to you by word of the Lord, that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will by no means precede those who have died." They're not questioning the resurrection, but the sequencing of it. Now, there's a reason why. First century Jews thought that those who survived and saw the Messiah coming were especially blessed. And Paul's people doesn't want their beloved dead to be second-class citizens. Paul's answer is basically, chill out. All in Christ will see it all. They will all be blessed. So I think it's, while somewhat a silly kind of worry, yet it's endearing, they love their beloved dead so much. But that's not what the image is all about. So how did Paul's hearers imagine the scene? Now you got to go back to the first century. And it was custom for men, women, and children to leave the city and greet the king or emperor on a royal visitation, to go out on the road that he was coming in on and escort him, cheering and rejoicing, back into the city. And once in the city, there would be the judgment seat set up to deal with the criminals. Judgment. Now, the trouble is, some hear these words now as if Jesus' coming is all about escaping this messy earth. Instead, it describes meeting Jesus on the road that he had left on, in the air, in the clouds. And then, and this is the important point, escorting him, cheering and rejoicing back down to earth, to renew the earth. Would you want to miss that sight? Our tendency is to make God's plan simply out of this world. God instead wants to invade his work of art, to redeem it, and bring his creation to fullness. You know, the very earliest heresy about Jesus was not that he was truly man. Peculiar. The earliest heresy about matter, this fleshy stuff, is that it has no part in God's redemption. Paul has a very, very different picture. He writes to the church in Rome, "The creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons and daughters of God, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God." That's a wild thought. Creation is waiting for you. In Christ and in you, a new creation is beginning. Our present situation is like a woman in labor. And so Paul goes on to say, "We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we await for adoption, the redemption of our bodies." Paul has a wonderfully positive notion about this world, about all matter, all flesh. He wants to see it all redeemed, not just our souls. Our belief is truly incarnational. God wishes to bring the entirety of creation to himself, that he may be, in St. Paul's phrase, all in all. So Paul was dealing with a local worry. But his answer rests not on fleeing the world, flesh, and matter, but God's embracing and transforming it. There should be in every Christian a profound reverence and respect for God's good creation. The planet should be cared for and delighted in, not plundered or trashed. Yet too many are tempted by a kind of a false spirit-flesh dichotomy. We see it in those who ignore or dismiss science. You know, the Catholic insight has a number of components, and some of them are these. The goodness of creation, and that includes all flesh and matter. Two, human nature is not depraved, it is not evil, rather it is merely wounded. Three, God's grace builds on that nature to take it forward. And fourth, every science ultimately leads the faithful heart to a deeper knowledge of God. Let me insist that the care of the planet is not just a nice thing to do. Rather, it is one of the 9 principles of Catholic social justice. This is not optional, but part of the magisterial teachings of the last 6 popes. Saying that science is not certain in this matter or that is both a misunderstanding of how science works and an escape of moral responsibility. We are all stewards of God's good creation. What do stewards do? They accept God's gift joyfully, develop them responsibly, share them lovingly, because we will all have to return them to the Lord with increase. Our life is not spiritual flight, but should be a joyous, joyous engagement. Beginning first with a real spirit of wonderment, of delight. So let me summarize that spirit of wonderment in Hilaire Belloc's words. Wherever the Catholic sun doth shine, there's always laughter and good red wine. At least I've always found it so. Benedicamus Domino. Indeed, we bless you, Lord, for your creation.
This has been a presentation of Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. Director Gary Glover, with music by Albert Tomaso and Shane Clarkson. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu or visit our offices on the 3rd floor of Old Union. Till next time, God bless you.